This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 7th of January, 2022. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. And of course, this is the first Talking Newspaper of 2022. Our editors this week are Liz and Gordon Legg. And our readers today are Ros Lydiard.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Claire Porter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter for this week, Peter Lydiard. And so we begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say, if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you've received from us, please telephone Liz Legree. Contact telephone number is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Now, as you listen to the recording, if you recall, you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks that you might want to listen to again. And a note for those of you who might have computers or tablets, as well as using the memory stick, you can access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. So we have four headline stories for this week. It is New Year's honours for two leading local figures. It's killing them. Alarm as women miss smear tests. And statue of businesswoman given approval. Now, Ros, can we have the item about the New Year's honours for two local figures, please?
Yes, of course. Two well-known Winchester figures have been recognised in the New Year's Honours List announced on New Year's Eve. Robert Hudson will receive an OBE for services to the hospitality industry and philanthropy, writes Andrew Napier. Mr. Hudson, who lives in Winchester, has been a fixture of the Hampshire hotel scene for more than 30 years, working at the Teuton Glen in New Milton, and then with the late Gerard Basset, founding the Hotel Duval in Southgate Street, Winchester, in 1994, before selling up in 2004 to the Malmaison Group. He moved on to establish the Pig and Lime Wood Groups. The Tim Jackson also received an OBE in recognition of his services for further education with his work as the principal of Sparsholt College and latterly Andover College. Mr. Jackson served as a principal in Sparsholt for 22 years until retiring in 2002. He started work there as a tutor in 1986 and oversaw a successful expansion and diversification of courses.
Thank you, Ros. Richard, please.
Yes, the headline is, It's Killing Them. A water company spilled raw sewage into the unique chalk streams... in the Winchester area on nearly 430 occasions last year, data has revealed. Southern Water discharged untreated sewage into Hampshire's fragile chalk streams, including the rivers Itchen, Meon and the River Hamble, for nearly 6,994 hours in 2020. The stark picture has been branded as scandalous by our former MP and Winchester City Councillor, Lord Chidgey, who is at the forefront of the battle to save the sensitive bodies of water. Data from the government and compiled by the Rivers Trust relates to 15 sewage storm overflows in 2020. These overflows cover Winchester and parts of the Meon Valley, with the highest number of occurrences at the Heathen Lane wastewater pumping station in Durley, with 162 untreated sewage discharges resulting in 3,193.67 hours of spillage. Among them also was the Hairstock Water Treatment Works, with 56 spills over 2020, resulting in 1,111.5 hours. Speaking about the figures, Lord Chidgey, who lives in Alresford, said he was not at all surprised, adding, "This is nothing new. This has been their practice for some considerable time." As previously reported, last year Southern Water was fined a record £90 million for dumping raw sewage into watercourses that flow into the Solent. The former Eastleigh MP has been campaigning to ensure greater protection for chalk streams and new environment laws to offer a lifeline to the county's rivers. Lord Chidgey said the pollution is killing the rivers. He continued, "In terms of ecology, the amount of oxygen in our streams is vital for all types of wildlife. In terms of nutrients, very expert people have been tearing their hair out for decades. The River Arle, where I live nearby, is slowly and progressively dying. It's not barren. Excuse me. It's not barren, but it's almost there, where all the fish and wildlife that anyone in the countryside would expect to see is now missing. Common in South England, chalk streams are nearly unique to this country, with only France having a sizeable number." Lord Chidgey said in a recent debate in the House of Lords that many chalk streams are in a sorry state through decades of pollution, over-abstraction and reckless discharging. Lord Chidgey and like-minded peers have been pressing the government over new laws aimed at curbing the over-abstraction of the river water for commercial use and discharging polluted water back, and banning the practice allowing foul sewage to flow into water sources when sewers overflow. He continued, "It's shocking that people cannot drink from our rivers without treatment, but also cannot swim in them safely." Lord Chidgey said that sewage is a huge factor, but others include runoff from farms. But he added, "Farmers are waking up to it. They're not polluting the way that Southern Water and other water companies do."
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
Alarm as women miss smear tests. Almost 100,000 Hampshire women missed their smear test during the first year of the coronavirus pandemic, according to a national cancer charity, and it said it should be ringing alarm bells. Joe's Cervical Cancer Trust said a national drop in cervical screening combined with unprecedented strain on the health service could lead to more women being diagnosed with preventable cancers. Samantha Dixon, the charity's chief executive, said the national drop in screenings was not unexpected in light of the pandemic, but said it remained a worry. She said, "Our health service is under unprecedented strain at the moment and facing a long winter. We cannot afford to let coverage slip further. It will only lead to even more cancers that could have been prevented." The charity's warning came as NHS England data showed a quarter of the 361,667 women eligible for cervical screening in Hampshire during 2021 did not attend an appointment. Intended to detect abnormalities within the cervix, routine smear tests are offered to women between the ages of 25 and 64 in an effort to prevent cervical cancer. Around 70% of eligible women in England were tested during the pandemic, but coverage dropped by 2% compared to 2019-20. In Hampshire, 75% of those eligible were screened, down from 77% the year before. It means an estimated 89,998 women in the area missed out on the potentially life-saving program during the pandemic, when invites to screenings were temporarily suspended and appointments delayed. Joe's Cervical Cancer Trust said that many women may have also been put off attending their screenings due to concerns about their risk of catching coronavirus during the appointment, an issue backed up by its research. Miss Dixon said that the figures should be seen as a warning, and she encouraged people to take the situation seriously. She said, in some areas, coverage is lower than 1 in 2, and that should be ringing alarm bells. Cervical screenings look for changes in the cells of the cervix, which could develop into cancer. During the screenings, a soft brush is used to collect a small sample of cells, which is then tested for any abnormalities. Women aged 49 and under are invited for tests every 3 years, while those older receive invites every 5 years. Uptake in Hampshire during 2021 was higher for the older women, with 77% of those aged 50 to 64 receiving a smear test, compared to 74% of women between 25 and 49. For more on booking a smear test, speak to your GP.
Thank you, Claire. Our fourth headline story is headed Statue of Jewish Businesswoman Given Approval. An application to construct a bronze statue of a medieval Jewish businesswoman in Winchester City Centre has been passed by Winchester City Council planning officers. The statue will be of Licoricia of Winchester and her son Asher, which will stand on a plinth in the forecourt of Winchester Discovery Centre in Jewry Street. This comes after a fundraising project by the Licoricia of Winchester Appeal. The project's website has a target of a VIP unveiling of the statue this coming February. The City Council's planning report said, the statue is considered to enhance the character and appearance of the conservation area and will add visual interest, as well as providing knowledge about this little-known medieval community. It is hoped that the statue will provide an opportunity to educate Winchester's population and visitors about its medieval past and Jewish community, and that it will be a lasting enhancement to the city. Educational materials and a website will further increase the knowledge of Licoricia and her community. The plan, approved by officers using their delegated powers, received no objections, with one comment in its support from the City of Winchester's Trust. It said, the Trust feels that this is an exciting and interesting proposal for a statue which will be appropriate for the site and supports this application. Licoricia was a prominent businesswoman in the 13th century, and she was murdered in the city in 1277. The statue will highlight the role played by the often persecuted Jewish community before their expulsion by Edward I in 1290. Close to Henry III, Licoricia helped finance Westminster Abbey and carved out a successful career against considerable odds. This was very unusual for women of the time, and she managed it whilst bringing up a family and in the face of increasing anti-Semitism. William Carver submitted the planning application and is from the Licoricia of Winchester Appeal. Speaking to the Chronicle in November, Mr. Carver said, we are very excited that we have raised the funds for this statue and that it has now been sculpted by Ian Rank Broadley and cast into bronze. The plinth will include the message, love thy neighbour as thyself, which is from both the New and Old Testaments, which is the core of what we wish to communicate. And the script will be in Albertus font, a font developed by a refugee from Nazism. We are looking forward immensely to the unveiling. Well, that concludes our four headline stories for this morning, and we move on to read the death notices. Bennett, Terence Terry Bennett, late of Itchinstoke, sadly passed away on the 8th of December 2021.
Clark, Barbara Marilyn Clark, passed away suddenly on the 18th of December 2021, aged 77 years.
Drew, John Drew, passed away peacefully at home on the 12th of December 2021, aged 82.
Goldie, née Ball, Margaret Joan Maggie Goldie, 8th of the 1st, 1937 to 22nd of the 12th, 2021, passed away peacefully after losing her battle with cancer.
Treasure, Geoffrey Treasure, died peacefully at home on Christmas Eve 2021, aged 92.
Williams, Elizabeth Louise Williams, 2021, peacefully with her family at Farnham Mill Nursing Home.
Wright, Derek Leslie Wright, peacefully at Durban House on Monday the 20th December 2021, aged 89 years.
Thank you. Now we'll move on to Christian comment, read by Claire, please.
This is written by Nigel Hemming, who has entitled it Deep Roots. Even though the tradition of making actual resolutions mostly seems doomed to failure, New Year always seems like a good time for reflection and renewal. The turning of the calendar provides a natural reset moment, and I have found it helpful to take time to think carefully about how I am looking forward into 2022. 1 year ago, we were in full winter lockdown in the UK. The numbers of those seriously ill in hospital with COVID were frighteningly high, and all our hopes were pinned on the vaccine coming over the horizon. I wrote a column then about the need to hold fast to God like ancient sailors in a storm, and that's what we've had to do for much of the last 12 months. Although now the landscape has somewhat changed, description seems as if it will be here for some time. After 2 years of uncertainty, my main goal for 2022 is to simply stay close to God and dig deep into his word as the source of all life and nourishment, trusting that everything else I need will flow from there. Psalm 1 paints a helpful picture where a believer who delights in God's purposes is likened to a tree planted by water. Blessed is the one whose delight is in the law of the Lord, and who meditates on his law day and night. That person is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever they do prospers. This metaphor speaks of stability and faithfulness through the ups and downs of life. There will be times when, although the branches are bare, the tree remains healthy because its roots are pushing deep into the moist ground and drawing up the goodness therein. In the right season, this tree will bear fruit year after year after year. Over the years, my life has been enriched by some incredibly godly and inspiring people who I would consider to be very much like this tree. These wise believers have spent decades faithfully extending their roots, quietly digging into the Bible's truths and applying them to their lives. The fruit that grows on their branches is rich in character. Humility, patience, love, encouragement, gentleness, and a deep sense of peace, trust, and perspective that sees them through the most challenging of circumstances. It is their example that I aspire to as I reflect on my own goals for 2022. As the calendar flips round again, I feel less concerned about trying to change external behaviours and much more determined to focus on making sure my own roots stay deep in the moist soil of God's Word. That way, with the help of the Holy Spirit, I can trust that the fruit of his character will continue to grow in my life through the seasons, and particularly through whatever is coming my way in 2022. And that was written by Nigel Hemming, Senior Pastor, Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you, Claire. Right, now we move on to letters to the editor. And, Ros, if you could read the first letter, please.
Yes, the first letter I have here is headed Own Agendas, and it's from James Anderson. Sir, the vaccine passports seem to be past their usefulness. Any unvaccinated person who has had COVID is at least as well protected as a vaccinated person, and with the Omicron wave that includes a lot of the population. Also, testing and isolation rules seem to have become counterproductive. Venues are shut, the NHS disabled, public transport on skeleton services, and schools are going part-time again. The rule has become the problem. Perhaps it is time to restore normal practices. If a person is not ill, then get to work. If ill, then stay at home until the fever has passed. What virtue is there in staying off forever, or even longer? Critics will ask about the 2 days of being infectious before falling ill. It takes test and trace more than 2 days to get to you. And carriers? Well, there's a problem, as asymptomatic implies that one cannot be infectious. The asymptomatic carrier is the ghost brought out by some medics when a source has not yet been found. I love the Professor Whitty phrase, a definite possibility. Hardly a poker table bet then. Medics have their own agendas and cannot be taken as impartial, sadly. Surprisingly, our MP, Steve Brine, has called this one correctly. And that was from James Anderson of Right Close, South Wanston.
Thank you, Ros. There's a certain amount of discussion around the table after that letter. And Richard's going to read the next one.
And we'll join in.
Yes.
Right. Well, this one is headed Redundant, and it comes from John Lawrence. I read with dismay your reports that some local people oppose the plans for the University of Southampton to develop its activities in the city on the site of the old River Park Leisure Centre, Chronicle December 30. The city should be looking for different ways to make use of this prime site now that we have a new, much improved leisure centre at Bar End. It's surprising that anyone would discourage Winchester from welcoming a proposal from a world-class, research-led university want to expand its presence in the city. Other towns and cities would go out of their way to create such an opportunity. And of course, universities are not commercial bodies. Their purpose is to deliver public good, and they have no shareholders to whom profits are distributed. Winchester has lost many jobs in recent decades with a decline in public sector employment, and the opportunity for growth in the knowledge and creative economy sector would be of great benefit to the city, and this must surely be something that all residents should welcome. John Lawrence, Bishopstoke Lane, Banbridge.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
This is headed Time Wasted. Many months, and in some cases years, have been wasted, and legal costs through procrastination of plans for both developments, River Park Leisure Centre and Silver Hill. Considering both projects are for the good of Winchester's residents, Is it not time for all parties in the City Council to sit round a table and reach a unified agreement in order that these important developments move forward? Naturally, there will be differences of opinion, but the focus must be on the long-term benefits to all. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
Thank you, Claire. This is another letter about Silver Hill. This one's written by Liz Hutchinson. Sir, it is now nearly 5 years since many people were engaged in the process that led to the development of the Central Winchester Regeneration Area, Silver Hill Supplementary Planning Document, SPD, that was adopted as policy in 2018 and referred to in your article December the 30th. Silver Hill key stage reached. And so it is perhaps timely to remember some of the key characteristics of this document. The SBD identified the area under consideration. This has now changed. Most importantly, however, the SBD envisaged that the area should be developed progressively, piece by piece, not in a piecemeal fashion. For this to be successful, an overall plan is essential to identify the different pieces and ensure that as they are developed, they add value to each other, crucial for the long term but also for the short term interventions. The SPD also identified key aspects of the character of Winchester, its buildings, and importantly, the spaces between buildings, the streets and the public open spaces, including the waterways, to ensure that they can be reflected in the new development. The SPD was developed following an extensive engagement process that involved many people and organisations from different parts of the city and district, people of different ages and backgrounds, led by an experienced and knowledgeable team of regeneration professionals who understood the importance of engagement and working collaboratively. The whole process built consensus, no easy task, for given the troubled background to this project. It was, however, successful and is one that could be replicated for a number of development projects, including the next stages of planning for Silver Hill. It is unfortunate that there are now very few council officers or cabinet members who are actively involved in the process, but the approach can still be used. Local knowledge and consensus building is important. It leads to better development and contributes to reducing the risk of further challenges from judicial review. However, to be successful, it requires expertise and needs to be well led. That was written by Liz Hutchinson of Clifton Road, Oramzaba, Winchester. Roz, next letter, please.
Yes, this one is a bit close to my heart. It's Memories of Unique Bus Conductor. Sir, I refer to James Freeman's splendid tribute to the bus conductor extraordinaire, David Scheuer. I'm writing this letter before the mini running day on January the 3rd of King Alfred Buses. And I am sure that many fond memories of Dave welcoming passengers onto his bus will be fondly remembered. He was special in every way, i.e. friendly, informative, and above all jovial. I recall on past New Year's Day running of the buses, he would say to me, "I'm on the route today passing the Theatre Royal. What is the pantomime this year? I will give it a plug." I replied, "Puss in Boots." Going along Jury Street, he would shout out, "Next stop for Theatre Royal and the pantomime. Enjoy the show." And the passengers would say, "Oh, no, we won't." And Dave, in a firm voice, retorted, "Oh, yes, you will." Emphasising will. Then all the passengers would clap him. A lovely guy of the Winchester characters. He will be sadly missed. And that's written by another favourite on the Hampshire Chronicle Tread, Phil Yates of Tower Street, Winchester.
Thank you, Roz. Richard, please.
And still on the buses, this from Diana Kirby. Hoping the reduced service is really a temporary emergency and not a portent for the future, I would like to request, however, that Stagecoach put notices up at bus stops with details of the changed times so that passengers are not hanging about in what could be adverse weather. Diana Kirby, Nations Hill, Kingsworthy.
Thank you, Richard. Clare?
I would like to know the cost to local people for the erection of the signs unsuitable for HGVs on narrow country lanes. And is it worth it, giving many people regularly choose to ignore these very important signs, including Winchester Planning and South Downs National Park? Mrs. J. Symes, Ashton Lane, Bishop's Waltham.
Yes, and now I have a letter which is slightly a riposte to the first letter about our Member of Parliament, Mr. Stephen Bryan, because it's headed Apology Ode. It's written by Martin Holmes. Sir, I write in support of Dr. David Murdoch, Chronicle Letters, December the 30th, and his considered and measured criticism of our MP's unwarranted and ill-judged comments about the Chief Medical Officer for England, Professor Sir Chris Whitty. Earlier in the coronavirus pandemic, many politicians praised the public for using their common sense in adjusting their behaviour as well as abiding by the rules. Now, as case numbers take off again and the NHS once more faces the real prospect of overload, but there are few rules, sound common sense advice is all the more necessary. Mr. Bryan appears to think otherwise. Indeed, his outburst suggests that he places the short-term challenges to the hospitality industry above the health of his constituents and the sustainability of the health service, and shows an unwelcome contempt for apolitical expert advice that does not fit with his own agenda. That is a decision for him, though he is supposed to represent the interests of all his constituents, but in criticising the greatly admired Professor Sir Chris Whitty, he once again finds himself at odds with the general mood. The announcement of the Chief Medical Officer's knighthood, along with the honours for his colleagues, has been universally applauded. Mr. Bryan would do well to reconsider his remarks and offer an apology. It is written by Martin Holmes, Culverwell Gardens, Winchester. Please.
Next item, headed Foreign Food. Sir, I read with interest Jane Gregson's happy reminiscences of her first experience of Italian cuisine in the Carova Cafe in Winchester, Chronicle Letters, December the 9th, Lost Times. How sad that in later life she feels that foreign cuisine has somehow become intrusive, and that she chose to associate her first experience of German cuisine, in particular, with the Blitz, of all things. That's from Don West of Woodfield Drive, Winchester.
I think this is the last letter, Richard, isn't it? Yes.
Well, it's from Dr. Tony Saunders, who's enjoying his greetings. When I visited local shops recently, I've been called love, dear, and darling. But my favourite is my lovely. I find these greetings very cheering in these gloomy times. Tony Saunders, Main Road, Otterbourne.
Yeah.
Well, isn't it nice to finish off on an upbeat?
Oh, yes.
Right, so those are our letters for this week. If you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL, or you could even drop in when you're in Winchester. Right, well, we move on to the opinion piece now. It's written by Khalid Aziz and it's headed Goodbye to All That. Well, here we are again. The start of a new year full of hope and expectation. New Year's Day has a special poignancy for me. 40 years ago to the day, I presented the first programme on the newly minted Television South. The station was fresh-faced, and so should I have been. Hopefully, viewers had no idea I'd been up all night with food poisoning, courtesy of one of Southampton's finest eateries. This is a time for resolutions, but January is a bad time to make such commitments. The depressing, gloomy weather is this year made worse by the third wave of COVID that's currently ripping through the world. So let's look forward, stick our necks out, and make a few predictions, not resolutions. Well, firstly, I predict that by the end of March, COVID infections will be on the decline. It's an immutable law that what goes up must come down. And the faster things go up, the faster they fall. Well, those who survive, the young and those sensible enough to get themselves jabbed, will no doubt have gained some immunity. The new drugs will have prevented from dying many of those hospitalised who might otherwise have succumbed. As for the anti-vaxxers, as the song goes, they will go their own way. Of course, we might get a new variant named Pi, the next letter in the Greek alphabet, but let's not meet trouble halfway. Incidentally, the World Health Organization have explained why they missed the two letters before Omicron. Nu, apparently, could be confused with new, and Xi, well, apparently there are too many people in the world bearing the name Xi. And that wouldn't be fair. Nothing whatsoever to do with the fact that Xi just happens to be the name of the Chinese president for life. And nothing whatsoever to do with the fact that the WHO receives significant funding from China. And there is absolutely no connection with WHO's inspection of the Wuhan laboratory, which, thanks to suboptimal cooperation from the Chinese authorities, seemed to be somewhat cursory. No viruses of mass destruction there. Go on, move along. Of course, if I had been in one nation, two systems, Hong Kong, and written the above, I would now be sitting cross-legged somewhere in deepest, darkest China, being re-educated. We are getting the better of COVID, and the rush for vaccinations over the festive period proved that most of the population finally gets it. I predict that there'll be no lockdown in England, despite the strictures north of the border introduced by the woman apparently now known to Glaswegians as Wee Nippy. Who says the Scots have no sense of humour? Well, it's not all good news, though. By the summer, everyone will have been struggling with energy bills, set to double if action isn't taken soon. Over their years, our leaders have been so economically and scientifically illiterate, they've never understood that cheap energy is fundamental to economic success. Thanks to the Woolly Hat Brigade, intent on knitting their own yoghurt, we gave up our world leadership in nuclear energy, instead buying in nuclear power from the French, banned fracking and closed coal-fired stations. Now Mr. Putin has his jackboot on the pipeline supplying us with Siberian gas. Sure, we have a great record in alternatives, but we're far from there yet, apart from once again asking the poor to decide whether to heat or eat. High energy costs affect pretty much the whole of our economy, and I predict that this, not COVID, will be the biggest drag on our recovery. Oh, one final prediction. Boris will not lead his party into the next general election. He might not be in Downing Street this time next year. Suddenly, the Emperor is seen to have no clothes. Apparently, he likes chaos. Well, it turns out that most of us don't. Happy New Year. And now we're just going to read editorial comment, please.
Yes, and this relates to the first item we had, the slow killing of the River Itchen. It's a stark, chilling phrase. asked what damage pollution was doing to chalk streams such as the Itchen, Meon, Arle and Test, Lord Chidgey said, "It's killing them." Our front page story today highlights that scandalous issue that water companies are still allowed to pump raw sewage into rivers when the weather is bad. Water companies have been private now for more than 30 years, making billions of pounds in profit. It's about time that in the 21st century they stop the practice and invest a part of those profits in building infrastructure that means such actions are no longer deemed necessary. Lord Chidgey, a former Liberal Democrat MP, is no eco-warrior prone to exaggeration. He's an engineer and former Winchester City Councillor who studied the evidence that pollution from water companies, but largely from agriculture, is slowly but surely destroying our watercourses. These rivers may look pristine, but their ecological diversity has been declining for some time. The warnings are being made. We must heed them.
Now we have a couple of pieces from Belgarum. As you know, Belgarum gives us an alternative look at some items that are in the news. First from Ros, please.
Yes, I'm delighted to read this. It's headed Classic Christmas Poem. An audiobook company based in Chandler's Ford released a new version of a classic Christmas poem. Monkey Nut Audiobooks publish a version of "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" in the style of The Snowman. Narrated by legendary broadcaster Mike Reed and accompanied with festive orchestral soundtrack by film composer Andrew Stamp, this audio version of the beloved poem is like no other. The audiobook also features an 18-minute bonus interview discussing the poem. The well-known poem, referred to by the famous first line, "'Twas the night before Christmas," was originally published anonymously in 1823 and has graced our festive seasons ever since. The poem has been called arguably the best-known verses ever written by an American, and is largely responsible for some of the conceptions of Santa Claus from the mid-19th century to today. The classic poem by Clement Clark Moore will be gracing our ear with this stunning new audio rendition, complete with the snowman-like original orchestral music. Perfect for radio and TV, this magical short will make children's eyes sparkle and transport grown-ups back to their childhood. The poem was recently number one in the poetry chart in Audible, alongside T.S. Eliot from Radio 4. Elliot Frisby, owner of Monkey Nut Audiobooks, said, "Each year, I see the magic in my children's eyes as I read them this poem whilst they sip hot chocolate on Christmas Eve. I want everyone to experience that magic." "'Twas the Night Before Christmas" is available on audio and Audible sites.
Thank you, Ros. I thought we were going to get the poem there, but...
wouldn't that be nice?
Wouldn't that be, if we could remember it all? Yeah. Yes. Oh, Claire, what is the second piece from Belgarum, please? Yes. She's giving me a funny look.
Would you like mine?
It's so different, that's the thing. Primark has the best festive tree. Right. The Brooks Shopping Centre has recently crowned the winner of its Best Dressed Christmas Tree competition. The team at Primark took home the prize for the Best Dressed Christmas Tree, which was a £150 charity donation to a charity of their choice. The competition included 10 local businesses who went head to head. There were some great entries from a variety of businesses, which included Waterstones, Theatre Royal, The Works, HMV and Winchester BID. Visitors to the Brooks voted for their favourite tree on their mobile and online. Over 700 votes were cast. Christopher Carter, Primark store manager, said, "The team put a lot of thought and heart into the tree, and we are so pleased we are able to help support the work of our nominated charity, Naomi House."
Thank you, Claire. Now, we should be looking at what's on for this week. Well, to be honest, there's not much on in the first week of January. There is, now we're reading this on Friday the 7th. Tomorrow is Saturday the 8th. If you, Rosie's raising her hand.
Open Saturday. At the Chesil Theatre.
Oh, yes, all right. Apart from the plug that Ros has just given for the Chesil Theatre's open morning tomorrow morning, those of you who actually receive your USB stick in time will be delighted to hear that at the Lights Theatre in Andover, there is the Simon and Garfunkel story. It's on for one night only. It's a brand new show celebrating 50 years of one of the world's greatest albums, Bridge Over Troubled Water. So tickets for that are available from the Lights. Telephone number is 01264 368368. That is 01264 368368. Yes, it is correct. Right, well, we move on to four items of some historical interest. It started off with a report from Ros about wheezing and grumbling, subjects which are very dear to all of our hearts.
Well, it isn't always only about buses, is it?
Oh, is it?
But okay. On this occasion, it is. The old buses wheeze and grumble around the city. The buses of yesteryear have again been dusted off to evoke a long-lost age on the streets of Winchester. The annual New Year's running of King Alfred's buses drew young and old from across the region. Every year, the Friends of King Alfred's Buses, that's FOKAB, bring out a number of vehicles that once worked the routes of King Alfred's buses until it closed in 1973, killed off by the rise of the private motor car. Many pensioners took the chance to enjoy the experience of again travelling on the draughty and noisy vehicles as they wheezed their way along the old routes around the city. Children enjoyed it too. "The bus, it vibrates like it's alive," said one 9-year-old on her first vintage bus ride. The charity's biggest event is now in May, partly because January is often too cold, although this year the weather was the mildest on record. As well as the vehicles of the local bus company, there were several guests motoring around the city, including a couple of bright red buses from London Transport.
Thank you, Ros. Richard, please.
Yes, I have a piece here. The memories of a Blitz survivor. Margaret White, née Cox, died on November the 26th at the age of 98. Those who knew her say she will be remembered for her vibrant fascination for everything that was going on around her and the vivid recollections she shared. Margaret lived in Romsey since 1981, but was born on October the 28th, 1923, the daughter of a shopkeeper in Eastleigh, John Henry Cox, and mother Mary Cox. Margaret had a sister named Beryl. By Margaret's teenage years, the family had been able to buy their own house in Wide Lane, Swadling. Margaret began to work at a young age and, as a teenager, took employment at the Supermarine factory in Woolston, where they built Spitfire planes ahead of the Second World War. The factory quickly became a target when the war began. Margaret spoke with Alan Matlock, chairman of the Spitfire Makers Charitable Trust, to give her first-hand account of the bombing of the factory. She said, "I left school in 1937 at the age of 14 with no qualifications and found work for 10 shillings a week in an office as a filing clerk. Within 3 years, I had found a better job in Vickers Armstrong Supermarine factory at Woolston, working in the accounts department. The war started in September 39 and things were quiet to start with, but in September 1940, the German Air Force started daytime bombing raids on our factories and towns. And of course, as our factory was making Spitfire fighter planes, we were an obvious target. I remember it was a Tuesday when the first raid on Supermarine happened. We were all working on the fifth floor of the building and there was no warning until we heard the roar of the planes and we knew instinctively that they were German bombers as they sounded different from the British. I was pushed under a solid desk as there was no time to get to a shelter. I saw through the window bombs coming down and falling on waste ground beyond the factory, but thankfully they missed our building. I can't recall now if there was any other damage around, but I can't imagine everyone escaping scot-free. Not everybody managed to get to the shelters in time, and some of the workforce were killed. In fact, one of the air raid shelters got a direct hit from the bombing. However, the factory was safe for the moment. On the Thursday, the German bombers came again and succeeded in bombing the factory. This time, the air raid siren gave us warning, but I, with some of my workmates, ran alongside the factory across a single railway line and up a hill to a pub and into their deep cellar where we stayed. It seemed like hours while the factory was being bombed. The bombs made the pub shake. Plaster was falling off the ceiling and we were all very frightened. Eventually the all clear sounded and we emerged from the cellar disoriented and shattered, but lucky to be alive. I lost all track of time and it could have been 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock. We could see the factory in ruins, and then I had to get from Woolston to my home in Swathling, about 6 miles. That morning I'd cycled to work, but in the aftermath of the bombing my bicycle was nowhere to be seen, and I never saw it again. I do remember walking home on my own in a bit of a daze, and of course my poor parents had been frantic with worry. I eventually got home about 7 o'clock. The story of the aftermath of the bombing of the Supermarine factory has recently been made into a play called The Shadow Factory by Howard Brenton. This is the story of how the factory was reborn from the ruins. Although the building was bombed, some of the machinery could be rescued and production of the Spitfire started again in various locations around the city of Southampton. Mr. Matlock said, "I first met Margaret in September 2018, when she accompanied the Out of the Shadows project vintage bus tour of the Spitfire dispersal sites in Shirley. We had the privilege to then interview Margaret and to record her amazing... These were shared with a national audience when she and Don Smith, our other honorary president, took part in the Remembrance Day Songs of Praise at Solent Sky Museum. She attended the launch of the Spitfire Makers project in February 2020 and was delighted when, on her 97th birthday, we invited her to be our honorary president. On being presented with the framed certificate, she hugged it. To her daughter Pauline and the rest of Margaret's family, we extend our sincere condolences." Margaret's daughter, Pauline Bell, said, "She made friends wherever she went. She had a great long life and kept busy and interested until the very end."
Thank you, Richard. Claire, your piece, please.
My piece is headed Alan Turing's Ancestors Medals Cell. A collection of medals awarded to ancestors of Alan Turing, the father of computer science, have sold at auction in Salisbury. The 7 lots related to the descendants of Mossum Boyd, Turing's great-great-grandfather, who was a general in the Bengal Army. Turing's own father retained links to India, working for the civil service, and his parents divided their time between India and the UK. The first lot in the collection was a CBE that was awarded to Turing's first cousin once removed, explained Ned Cowell of Woody and Wallace, where the medals were sold. It is somewhat ironic that despite his incredible achievements, Alan Turing was awarded the lesser honour of an OBE by George VI, possibly because the work he was doing was so secretive. Two of the medals were awarded to one of Turing's great uncles, Captain Brooke Boyd of the 68th Bengal Native Infantry. That was lot 14 and sold for £1,125. And another two to another great uncle, Captain Alexander Boyd of 2nd Bengal Fusiliers. That was lot 15 and sold for £2,375. A Royal British Nurses Association badge was also sold with a religious publication that was given to the wife of Turing's cousin by Florence Nightingale. It realised £400. The generations of the Boyd family are a fascinating example of British military families in the 19th century, continued Cow. Turing was brought up in a family of the old empire, where people had strong links to India and Africa, and there is no doubt that his upbringing had a significant impact on how he decided to use his gifts. The medals were sold on 14th December as part of the medals and coins auction, which also included a First World War group of five medals to leading telegraphist Alexander Mackintosh Cowie. They sold for £1,375. And a Victoria Cross group of miniature dress medals awarded to Major General Henry Edward Manning Douglas. And they sold for £5,250.
Thank you, Claire. Now, our last item of historical interest is headed Match to Mark 250 Years. Under leaden skies, but watched by a large crowd, the first New Year's Day cricket match on the down since the millennium was heralded by intrepid Mike Beardale climbing to the top of the monument. Thus, the teams were summoned to play a game which inaugurated a year of events celebrating the playing of the first ever first-class cricket match at the Cradle of Cricket. After the obligatory team photographs had been taken and fortified by copious quantities of hot coffee, tea and bacon rolls, the two teams of 10 players took the field with the Huskies, batting first, having lost a toss using a George III halfpenny dated 1772. The Huskies, including representatives from local clubs, including Hursley Park, Havant, Hambledon and Portsmouth, as well as cricketing journalists and the MCC. All agreed that the venture had been a great success and an excellent start to a year of celebration. Over 40 players and spectators then retired for lunch at the Batten Ball, at which Hugh Turberville received the Man of the Match Award from Hambledon Vineyard for his all-round contribution to his side's victory. So that's the end of the historical items. But before we go on to items of general news, I know that you are all waiting in anticipation for the lighting up times.
Oh, yes.
So I won't let you wait any longer. The sun, if there is any, will rise shortly after 8 a.m. next week and set again at around 4:15 p.m. Well, we now move on to items of general news. The first item, Ros, please.
Yes, this is a victim tribute, and it's to Alfie Marlowe Alain de Cruz, aged 11, died on the M3 on Boxing Day. The family of a boy who died in a single vehicle collision on the M3 in Winchester has today paid tribute to him. Police were called at around 8:50 p.m. on December the 26th when a red Nissan Kroshi, which was travelling on the M3 southbound, was in collision with a roadside barrier on the slip road junction at Junction 11. Tragically, 11-year-old Alfie died following the incident. Paying tribute to him, his family said, "Our beloved Alfie, we are so lucky to have had you in our lives, giving us brightness, joy, love and happiness. Now that you have been taken away from us so suddenly and at such a young age, just 11 years old, we are going to miss you forever. We will carry you in our hearts and love for all our lives until our last breath, and we hope that one day we will meet in God's heaven to give you the last hug that you so deserved before you left. We love you and always will. Aria, Maria and Chloe." Officers are keen to hear from anyone who can assist with the information. Senior Investigating Officer Detective Sergeant Mark Furs of the Serious Collision Institute said this is tragic, in which an 11-year boy has sadly and so suddenly lost his life. We are working hard under the exact circumstances. Anyone with information which may assist us should call 101 and quote the reference 44210516607.
Richard, please.
Struggling care homes will not close. Council-run care homes that are struggling financially will not close, a senior politician has vowed. Concerns have been raised at Hampshire County Council about the long-term future of the social care budget, with current projections forecasting a £14 million budget deficit by 2023-24. With a social care levy not due to take effect until April 2023, there are some in the County Council who fear for the future of care homes that are no longer financially viable. Earlier this year, Cranley Paddock in Lyndhurst and Copper Beaches in Andover were temporarily closed by the council, with occupants moving to alternative nearby housing options. But Executive Member for Adult Services and Public Health, Councillor Liz Fairhurst, has vowed that no care home in Hampshire will be closed down. She said, "Can I make one thing absolutely clear? We are not in the care home business to make money. We run care homes to care for people, and that will always be the bottom line." Because of the COVID-19 pandemic, people have been reluctant to put their loved ones into care homes, and so we made the decision to consolidate two homes in our area. We plan for all temporarily closed homes to reopen in the near future. We want to provide the best care we possibly can. Part of that is getting people into care homes, but also in recruiting and retaining staff members. At the time when the care homes closed, the County Council said that they would remain closed at least until the summer of 2022. Cranley Paddock was reportedly at 50% capacity at the time it was closed. Following the closure, nearby Forest Court in Totton reached a capacity of 90%. But opposing Liberal Democrat spokesman for Health and Social Care, Councillor David Harrison, fears the long-term impact could be far worse due to rising costs, less government funding and climbing inflation rates. He said, "We've already seen that Hampshire County Council is willing to close care homes, even if it is a temporary measure. There are a number of challenges facing the social care sector. That's irrefutable. COVID-19 tore through care homes at the start of the pandemic, and that also drove down occupancy rates. What happened at Forest Court is great. It's a wonderful care home. But that figure is all down to what happened at Cranley Paddock. I don't know if it'll ever reopen, truth be told." What we have to bear in mind, though, is that uprooting elderly people from familiar environments is scientifically proven to speed up their mental deterioration.
Thank you, Richard. Claire, please.
COVID has peaked across the district. After weeks of rising numbers, COVID is finally starting to fall in the Winchester district. COVID has dropped across the district for 5 days, running on Tuesday. The latest available figure for patients is 47 in local hospitals, up from 39 on Christmas Eve and 46 on December the 16th. Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust has said that there are 25 COVID patients in Basingstoke, 32 at the RHCH and none in Andover, compared to 19, 23 and 2 at Christmas. Concerns nationally about NHS staffing are not being seen locally, with staff sickness on December the 23rd, the hospital trust at 6% compared to 5.5% in the previous week. Two deaths have been reported in the district over Christmas, bringing the death toll to 186 since March 2020. COVID is now dropping in most parts, especially in Winchester City, although the numbers are still at high levels.
Thank you, Claire. This story is headed Christmas Without Heating for Local Family. A Winchester family were left without heating over Christmas after being told it would be fixed before the festive period. Stuart Weatherall, his wife and three children, aged 3, 8 and 10, moved into a city council property on Winnell Manor Road on December the 14th, only to find that the heating was not working. Mr. Weatherall explained how boiler company Correct Contract Services kept pushing the work back, which meant it was over 2 weeks until it was fixed. He also explained that one of his children had a chest infection at the time. When the family first moved in, they found that the heating was not working because there was no money in the meter. When they topped it up, Correct Contract Services told them they had to wait for an appointment for them to uncap the gas. Mr. Weatherall said, "We had not heard anything by the Wednesday, 15th, so we rang up to ask what was happening and were told that someone had been out on the Monday, so they closed the case. We explained that this was not what happened, and they arranged for someone to come out on Friday the 17th. And when they came out, they were here for 10 minutes before saying there was a part broken on the boiler and they needed to order the part. I asked them when it would be here by and was told Monday the 20th and they would come and fit it. Monday came and so on Wednesday the 22nd, I had to ring them again. So they did not contact us to be told we had not been booked in and the part was not there yet. I'd still not heard anything on Thursday, so I rang again, and after being put on hold for a while, was told the part was ready to collect on Friday, Christmas Eve, guaranteed, and we would be the first job. No one had arrived by 2 p.m, so I rang to be told that the engineer had left for the day and would not be seen until after Christmas. I was very angry, as we have three children, one who had a chest infection at the time. After this, Mr. Weatherall was told that the problem would be fixed on December the 29th. Someone did arrive to fix it that day at 5:30 p.m. and left at 8:15 p.m. Winchester City Council were approached for a comment, but did not respond. Roz, please.
Yes, this one is slightly more cheerful, I'm happy to say. It's headed Online Drama Classes for Young People with Disabilities. A Winchester theatre company that supports performers with learning disabilities is launching a new online performing arts classes for young people. Blue Apple Theatre are offering a free taster for young people aged 14 to 18 with learning disabilities. And this would be on January the 8th from 11 a.m. till 12 p.m. Blue Apple's brand new young company will offer a mix of singing, dance and drama and will be facilitated by trained professionals. They will explore all aspects of performing arts, including drama, movement and song, in a fun and nurturing environment with development opportunities to perform and progress into Blue Apple's adult companies and sessions. The term starts the week beginning January the 10th and ends on the week beginning April the 4th. The cost is £7 per session. To book your price for the free taster or half a term stroke full term, email admin@blueappletheatre.com or phone Blue Apple Theatre on 07510 844 480.
Thank you, Rose. Richard, please.
Boxing Day hunt assault being investigated. Police are investigating an assault and criminal damage during a Boxing Day hunt in the Meon Valley. A car reportedly driven by two hunt saboteurs monitoring the Hursley Hambledon hunt near Meonstoke was allegedly attacked with a door window smashed and a person inside assaulted. Hampshire Police said in a statement, "We were called out at 2:07 p.m. on December 26, following reports of an assault and criminal damage on Stocks Lane, Meonstoke. It comes after members of a hunt group were involved in an altercation with a small group of members of the public. One person was assaulted, albeit no injuries were reported, and attempts were made to steal a two-way radio. Officers were deployed to the scene and police inquiries remain ongoing to identify those responsible. No arrest has been made. The Hursley Hambledon Hunt traditionally holds a meet starting at the Buck's Head pub in Meonstoke every Boxing Day."
Thank you, Richard. Claire?
Marathon in the Antarctic. An ex-soldier has continued his quest to complete a polar mission of running marathons in the world's coldest places. Despite the world put off all forms of travel by continuously changing rules and regulations, British adventurer and Channel 4 Hunted star Jordan Wiley, who lives in Alsford, ran 26.2 miles in Antarctica. After nearly 3 weeks of flights, quarantines, PCR tests and bureaucracy, and patiently waiting for good weather, the former soldier and Army Cadets National Ambassador made it to the Union Glacier in Antarctica, where he ran a marathon in what is the coldest, windiest, iciest, highest and driest continent.
Oh.
It is currently also the only continent in the world with zero COVID cases. Jordan has already completed ice-cool marathons in Siberia in Russia, Yukon in Canada, Alaska in the USA, and Jökulsárlón in Iceland. He said to accomplish a marathon at the end of the earth on this magical place with an incredibly tough challenge. It was punishing from start to finish and unforgiving throughout.
Thank you, Claire. The things some people would do to have fun.
I know.
This story is headed Watchdog Visit Flags Problems. A Winchester nursery run by a troubled childcare provider has been criticised once again for failing to safeguard those in its care. Casa dei Bambini Day Nursery in St John Street was rated inadequate by Ofsted following an inspection in June. The education watchdog returned just 4 months later in October, but the inspector said the nursery had made insufficient progress and had been hit with another inadequate mark. The nursery is run by Hartley House Montessori Limited, whose director is Susan Hartley Raven. In July, the Lido Nursery School and Activity Club, also owned by Mrs. Hartley Raven, closed down when inspectors found that it had failed to resolve welfare concerns and children did not make good progress. Despite some improvements, Ofsted said that the health and safety of the children is not assured because there are breaches of requirements relating to safeguarding and welfare. Inspectors said that while children were well supervised, staff did not remove plastic bags that are accessible to youngsters, and they prop up wood against discarded and broken toys where children play. The report, published on December the 24th, said older children enjoy a better learning experience than younger children. Staff show good teaching skills at this age group and help children make progress they are capable of. Babies, particularly the newest ones, are unsettled because they are not able to form strong emotional bonds with their key person. The staff can change daily, and babies' care needs are not always met. Inspectors noted that nappy changing lacks privacy for babies and sleeping arrangements do not consistently meet their needs. Staff are also not clear on their roles and responsibilities, with some in key roles have not completed children protection training. The report added, parents speak positively of the setting. They report their children are happy and progressing well in their development. There is a good communication with the staff. A nursery spokeswoman said, "We are exceptionally disappointed to be re-inspected just 3 months after the initial inspection. Even though we are on track with our strategy to improve and raise the quality of care, teaching and learning, we had not had sufficient time to embed the changes fully. We continue to strive forwards positively, taking into account the feedback from inspection, and we are confident that the changes we have made will ensure that we will achieve the results that we are striving for on our next inspection. This will be reflected in the feedback following a recent support visit from the local authorities. The new nursery manager and the team are continuing to work exceptionally hard to evaluate every area of practice and bring awe, wonder and joy to each and every day to the children in our setting. Our families are continuing to support us and we would like to thank them for their commitment and understanding." Roz, the next story, please.
Yes, this is nice. Joy as young girl receives a special letter. A girl with sight loss from Waltham Chase was delighted to receive a letter from Father Christmas written in Braille, thanks to a national sight loss charity. Kira Mills, 12, received the letter in an accessible format with the help of the Royal National Institute of Blind People, RNIB. Santa teamed up with RNIB to ensure every child with a vision impairment received a reply to their letter in an accessible format, including Braille, large print and audio. Kira was born with a bilateral optic atrophy, which caused her optics nerve to not form properly. She also has nystagmus, a condition that causes involuntary movement of her eyes, which makes it hard for her to focus her sight. She's been receiving accessible letters from Santa for the past few years and says doing so makes her feel independent as she can read it without the help of her parents. Kira said, "I love my accessible letter from Santa. When it carries through the post, I couldn't believe I had a letter from, for me, in Braille. Lots of times I can't get included as things aren't accessible, and all my friends get excited, and I don't know why. With my special Braille letter, I get to join in with the magic of Christmas, just like everyone else." Kira enjoyed her time this Christmas by performing in a show, doing a park run on Christmas Day, and of course, getting presents. When she grows up, she dreams of becoming a singer and a gold ball in a Paralympian. She's already had her first taste of stardom with an appearance on ITV2 to introduce RNIB's Christmas campaign advert, in which she also stars. Andrea Jones, RNIB's head of supporter retention, said, "Receiving a letter from Santa is such an exciting experience for a child. Kira is just one of many children in the UK with a vision improvement who RNIB is supporting to ensure that Christmas is accessible and inclusive for all. Our aim is to create an experience that means no child misses RNIB letters from Santa is just a part of this work."
Thank you, Roz. Richard, please.
Poetry project, a success for charity. A poetry project has been completed by staff and residents of a Winchester Almshouse charity with the help of the Hampshire Poet. A Poetry for Wellbeing project for almshouse charity St John's Winchester, led by Hampshire poet Catherine Beavis, has inspired residents and staff to write poems, which will be published in a new book and publicly displayed around the residential development on Colebrook Street, which is scheduled for completion during 2022. The sessions were designed by Catherine and launched by St John's Winchester as a way for residents and staff to express themselves, celebrating their lives by writing about the places, people and memories that have mattered most to them. The workshops ran once a week for 6 weeks, with Catherine teaching participants how to translate their thoughts and feelings into poetry on the page. Since then, she's been mentoring the poets, old and young alike, to hone and edit their work, making sure their poems are as good as they can be for publication and display. Many of these poems will be published in a new anthology. Enough copies will be printed for each resident and staff members, as well as for immediate neighbours, local libraries, schools and prisons. Catherine is now in the process of writing a commissioned poem that will take its inspiration, ideas and images from the work she's done within St John's family and reflecting its values, as well as her discussions with residents, staff and volunteers. This poem will be permanently displayed on the new site. Clive Cook, Chief Executive at St John, said, "We've been delighted by the response. The workshops have really helped participants to come together as part of a community, learn how to write about the experiences they care about and have the opportunity to have their poems publicly displayed." Catherine Beavis said, "I've been touched and inspired by my experiences leading this Poetry for Wellbeing project. I hadn't realised what a close and loving community exists inside its walls, and it's been an absolute privilege to work with such talented, dedicated people, both residents and staff. The poems that have resulted from their imaginative engagement are beautifully varied. Each of these poems is an individual and alive as a face, and each one demands something fresh from us. Some of these poems want to tell us their stories, others to reveal secrets, still others want to bless us, conspire with us, hold out a hand to us. I can't wait until these poems find their permanent home inside the covers of our book and on the walls of St John's new building."
Richard, Claire?
Bells, I beg your pardon. Bells ring in the new year once again at Cathedral. The centuries-old tradition of ringing out the old and ringing in the new was revived this New Year's Eve at Winchester Cathedral. No bell ringing was allowed last New Year because of the COVID-19 lockdown restrictions, but it was a welcome return which those within earshot in the city were able to enjoy. Under the direction of Tower Captain Nick Bucknell, the bells were rung half-muffled prior to midnight to mark the dying of the old year, and then, with their muffles removed, they pealed out immediately after the heaviest bell, the tenor, weighing 1,800 kilogram had sounded out the 12 strokes of the midnight hour. In previous years, it has been customary for members of the cathedral community and their civic guests to climb the 130 steps up to the ringing chamber to see the ringers in action, prayers being said by the Dean to welcome the new year. Due to the current COVID-19 restrictions, this did not take place, so instead the tower captain read Alfred Lord Tennyson's poem, Ring Out Wild Bells.
Thank you, Claire. This item is headed 7-week closure to the Boost Discovery Centre. The major refurbishment of Winchester's hub is underway and it will be closed for 7 weeks. Winchester Discovery Centre will benefit from a £715,000 investment with upgraded facilities and improved gallery spaces with enhancements to cafe toilets and lift. It follows a decision to develop a new cultural hub at the centre through a partnership between the County Council and Hampshire Cultural Trust. Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Recreation, Heritage and Rural Affairs, Councillor Edward Heron, said, "This major refurbishment of the Winchester Discovery Centre site is set to deliver a fresh new look for the landmark building, offering significantly upgraded facilities. Unfortunately, during the most disruptive stage of this construction, it is necessary to close the whole site temporarily. We apologise for the inconvenience this will cause and thank customers for their support. Over this time, we are encouraging customers to make use of our extensive digital library or one of the nearest alternative library branches. Refurbishment will see improvements throughout the building, including to the children's library and community spaces, a new welcome desk, refreshed book stock, and the creation of a new quiet study area. And there will be additional facilities for teenagers and young adults, including a digital lab providing courses on skills such as design. The cafe bar will also be upgraded to make it better suited for evening events. The city space gallery will be relocated onto the mezzanine to create an exciting new exhibition space. Customers are also being advised that during the closure, no fines will accrue for books loaned on Winchester in the run-up to this time. Historic fines will still apply. The nearest public libraries are Eastleigh and Chalmers Ford. The public toilets operated by Winchester City Council on Tower Street will stay open. For anyone with ill health, a disability or caring responsibilities, the library can come to your home. And you can contact the County Council to arrange that. Ros, please.
This one is about work, which is designed to make the M27 quieter, and it's set to start this month. Work is due to start soon to prepare the M27 to be made quieter after years of residents' complaints. As part of the next phase of the £50 million works to resurface the concrete section of the road between junctions 5 to 7, repairs will begin this month. This is in order to repair the concrete in preparation for it being covered by low noise asphalt, which the National Highway says is aimed to ensure a smoother ride for drivers and reducing noise for near neighbours, near residents. Despite this, though, National Highway says that because the concrete needs repairing, the resurfacing won't begin until the spring of 2023. The news comes after residents in the West End have complained for years that the road was too loud. Now these residents will be issued with letters setting out the details of the programme, which is to be part of the £400 million programme to fix concrete roads across the country. Eastleigh MP Paul Holmes said that the resurfacing was top priority for him since he was elected, adding, "It is brilliant to see this important project taking shape. It represents a 50 million involvement in our rural area that will provide a much quieter road surface and ensure that road surfaces will be fit for purpose for decades to come.
Thank you, Ros. And Richard, I think this will be the last news item.
Future uncertain for bespoke tailor. The future of a men's tailor in Winchester is uncertain after its parent company was put into liquidation. Trinity, the owner of the bespoke tailor Gieves and Hawkes, said this week that FTI Consulting and R&H Services had been appointed as joint liquidators. It said the liquidators were considering the opportunity of a possible restructuring. The business was placed into liquidation at the request of Standard Chartered, following a failed attempt to find a buyer for the brands owned by Trinity, the Times reported. It means Gieves and Hawkes, which has been trading for about 250 years, is at risk of permanent closure. The Chronicle reported online last week that there had been hopes for the Winchester store. A spokesman for Gieves and Hawkes, based in the square, said, "We've been in administration for about a year now. We're up for sale and looking to be brought out in the new year. There's been quite a lot of interest in us." Founded in 1771, Gieves and Hawkes is one of the oldest bespoke tailoring companies in the world, providing ready-to-wear as well as bespoke and military tailoring.
Thank you, Richard. Well, that concludes our news items for this week. Before we go, another reminder that Liz Legree is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. The contact number again is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. So thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, to our editors Gordon and Liz, and of course many thanks to our readers Ros.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Claire.
Bye.
And from me, Peter, until next time, goodbye. And would you please put your memory stick in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible, putting the address slip inside the envelope, please. Goodbye and thank you.